Hello, my name is Bill Cummings, and you're listening to Show Me Magic, a God Is in the TV recommend show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of Show Me Magic, a new music podcast from godisinthetvzine.co.uk. This week, we are joined by Mike Turner from Happy Pappy Birthday to Me Records and Crashing Through Publicity. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for having me on.
No problem. And of course, you've had a quite a long career in music, working in music in various aspects. You run a record shop and also various labels and also a promotion as well. You did at some point as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done. I ran a record store for about 20 years, gearing up to open my own in the next year. I do press. That's what I'm doing now. Run a label. Done a music festival.
Yeah.
Worked in radio. Yeah, like you name it, I've probably done it. Tour managed, all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
And is it right? You're based in Atlanta, Georgia. Is that right?
I'm based in Milledgeville, Georgia, but okay. I'm moving to Atlanta. Okay. I was moving to Atlanta before all the COVID-19 shutdown stuff, and so it's just kind of put off moving until maybe the end of the year instead of the summer.
Starting a new business must be interesting at this time as well.
That's been the thing. It's been like 2 years in build up and trying to open a store, and me and my girlfriend Marie were getting ready to open the store this fall, and we were just starting to get all the banking stuff ready to sign and jump into it. And this happened the same week we were supposed to go with a realtor to look at different locations and buildings and stuff like that. You know, the shutdown happened. Putting it off a little more. I mean, I don't know. I look at it like maybe it's very lucky because at least we weren't in a lease knowing we couldn't open. So it's like there's part of me, it's like I hate that it's delayed. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so glad we didn't have a lease and a store to deal with during this. So
also gives you time to plan as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, and see if this, you know, things ever do get back to kind of normal, I guess, you know.
And of course, Jim Orton is here, the perennial. How you doing, mate? How's this week treating you?
Badly, yeah, badly.
It was your birthday, wasn't it, on the weekend?
It was, yeah. I've entered my 40th year. countdown now begins. And then when I hit 40, I'm not going to age anymore. That's it. I'm not going to actually change. It's going to be 40 forever.
All right, so if you haven't heard the show before, we talk about new music and some cult classics at the end of the show. We're going to kick off with Mike's first pick. What have you brought for us?
I brought the new single from Boy Racer, Hit and a Miss.
It's not as hard as you think. A new locale is just like a new haircut. You think it's like this? But it's hit and miss. I love to roll with it. Well, occasionally I'm caught off guard, getting ready for the workday. The alternative hits of my youth echo round the empty store. Now I'm listening to some clown sing about the side streets I won't slip down. Think it's like this, but it's hit and miss. I need to roll with it. But it's hit and miss. I love you all.
cool. That was Boy Racer, Hit and Miss. What label's that on?
It's on Stuart from Boy Racer's Emotional Response label. So it's self-released. I've been a Boy Racer fan since hearing them in the like mid-90s, early 90s. They're kind of one of the, you know, like, I guess, I mean, they were on Sarah Records. But I felt like maybe they're on the end of Sarah Records for people or who like Sarah Records, but they don't like all the kind of more twee or shoegazy stuff. They were like on the noisy stuff. I felt like maybe hardcore Sarah fans weren't as big into, you know. I like the fact they were kind of maybe the roughest abrasive band on that label.
I was kind of reminded like The Wedding Present even. And I did actually write down C86. So that goes with that era, doesn't it? So
yeah. I know Boy Racer toured with Wedding Present back when they first were getting noticed in like the later part of the 90s or whatever. Or right before Wedding Present became Cinerama or whatever, Cinerama.
I quite enjoyed it. And sort of a rifle of melodies, and the video is quite cool as well.
Yeah.
They're making their own vinyl records, it looks like, with a Dalmatian.
Yeah.
Which I found quite amusing. So what did you think, Jim?
Yeah, no, I enjoyed that. I had my punk phase in sort of the late 90s when I was at college, and I was into bands like, there's an English band called Snuff, which it kind of reminded me of. They're still going, I think, but they're that kind of sort of more abrasive side of things. It was almost like an English sort of feel to it, sort of a 90s punk, but maybe with a bit of Mighty Mighty Boss tones with kind of the brass on it.
Yeah, I was going to say the brass coming through at the end. Yeah,
it sort of reminded me a bit of them. So it's sort of a bit
wave
of
wave pitches, I was thinking as well. Wave pitches.
To me, this one reminded me of like a fuzzed out House Martins with the with the horn part. You know. They don't normally have horns, but.
Oh, I kind of like that's what I mean. It's just sort of that era where there was a world that was quite prevalent thing. There was a lot, rather it being like, it was almost like a mixture of ska and kind of more traditional punk around the late 90s. So you did have quite a lot of brass in very sort of normal, like say, straightforward kind of the sort of the punk feel that was sort of obviously taking their influences from sort of the late 70s, early 90s sort of thing. But so that's what kind of reminded me as well. But the my Boss Tones thing sort of a bit generic. But there was. I enjoyed that, yeah. It's sort of right up my street, a bit nostalgic.
I'm going to go with the traditional gym score of 7.5 on that one. What say you, Mike?
It's not my like favorite Boy Racer song, but it's the newest single, which is from the record. So that's
you're recommending the band as much as the song, yeah.
Yeah. But I also like the fact the reason I chose this one over the previous single from this album was that it had the horns on it, and it was something different for Boy Racer. Yeah. So I'm going with the 8 because I don't really ever give a 10, and this is pretty close. So it's like I'm giving it an 8.
Jim,
you read my mind, Bill.
Okay, my first track of the week. Now this is the old girl group from Cardiff, Panic Shack, with Jew Jit.
Excuse me, my friend was sitting there. Yeah, but she's coming back in a second. Fine, sit there, whatever. No, I got a drink, thanks. Yeah, my eyes are up here, mate. Definitely.
both of my tracks, new tracks this week, are from Welsh artists, so I kind of went down that road this week. Yeah, I quite like the tongue-in-cheek Cardiffian kind of slang from it, and they talk about it being, they were all out one night and some sleazy guys were coming onto them and they kind of nipped them in the bud, and that was kind of what it was all based around. But yeah, they're an interesting band, Panic Shack. They're kind of coming out with this kind of mix of like Riot Girl rattle and post-punk bass lines. And it kind of reminds me a bit of X-Ray Specs a little bit. I was trying to think what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
I love that kind of like the kind of playfulness of it and the tongue-in-cheekness of it and all the kind of like, hiya! And all that kind of like, you know, it reminds me of like Bruce, you know, when you used to go to see a Bruce Lee movie and afterwards you're doing all the kicks and everything, you know, it kind of reminded me of that. And they kind of play in dress up in the video as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. And I want to see them live because I haven't seen them live yet. And they're coming across with plenty of energy. And yeah, they're basically the reason they got together, they said, was because they felt like the local music scene was kind of a boys club. And I kind of like that idea of getting together like a full girl group. And, I think it's a bit of fun. A bit of
what
fun.
What was their previous single? There was a
who's got my lighter?
That's right.
The single.
That's it. Who's got my lighter? Yeah, because that was being played on Six Music quite a lot.
That's right. Yeah,
I think it was even on like Roundtable or something like that. I seem to remember hearing it on that. And that was it was. It's when I sort of half recognised the name, but I didn't think about it too hard. And then it was just Jiu-Jitsu, and they're all kind of like, you feel like they're just basically narrating when they go out. Obviously in Cardiff, and it's almost like it's not exactly a diary, but it's basically they're taking their experiences when they're out, or even, you know, just silly moments or something like that. Because it is quite, it's like you say, it's quite tongue in cheek. I was sort of getting it was weird because the noise, the sort of like the drum when it first started sort of almost reminded me of like more like the 60s girl bands as well, but then it kind of went quite 70s punk. And I wrote the Slits down, and maybe even a bit of L7.
Yeah, the Slits, but definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I thought it was fun. To me, the song could have been shorter. Yeah. You know, I think there was like a dialogue in it that was kind of just threw me off a bit. But then it made me interested enough to go and like check out a bunch of other songs by the band, which is kind of where I was like, oh, that, you know, Who's Got My Lighter song, I'm really into that. But like when listening to this, I didn't get as much of the Riot Girl thing, just because I felt like it was the production is a little more slick than what a lot of Riot Girl records would be. And I was thinking more of like, oh, it's kind of like, I was thinking more of things like, oh, the Ting Tings, or maybe a slightly glossed over, like the rough edges taken off something like Lovely X, for me. Or there's this band that was in the mid 2000s, Morningwood. And it took me like hours to remember this band, but I was kind of like, I was thinking when watching their video and listening to the song, like, what does this remind me of? And it just took me forever.
There is a bit of a noughties feel to some of it.
I suppose
the Riot Girl comes in with the vocals on some of their stuff, some of their other stuff maybe, but musically I'd say it's more like a post-punk pop, really.
I enjoyed it. I just was kind of like, it definitely got me enough to go listen to other stuff. Like, that was kind of the thing. Like, hey, this made me actually check out more music by them. But it also was like, I prefer the Who's Got My Lighter solo more so. But, it's good. It's good fun.
I suppose I just wanted to get them on because I quite like what they're doing, and I haven't seen them live yet, so that's always the test, isn't it? Because, you know, you can like a band on record, and then when you see them live, it's a different thing. So I haven't had the chance yet, but I'd like to.
Yeah, it's just the production of it for me was a little too slick for me.
Like the edges have been taken off or something. I agree with what you're saying, guys. I'm going to give it 7.5 again, to be honest. Jim?
7 for me.
Mike?
7.
So what we got now? We got a bit of AJ Tracy.
Yes, sir. This is a little bit of a left field choice for me, as you know, Bill. I do like my guitars. But, obviously, with everything that's going on. But also, it's just something that popped up that had an interesting sample. But this is AJ Tracy featuring Mostak and Dinnegas. The vibes are getting, the vibe, the food is serving.
Yeah. 48 frames and a turtleneck. Parents always love me as a dinner guest. Had the wins, but I'm not a winner yet. If we're trying to make a pass, I'm an intercept. Got a dog up in the club, I ain't bring a pet. Covered in the ice, I ain't trying to sweat. We can make some bread, we can split a check. But I ain't back and forthing on the internet.
When I think of it, babe, you'll be a 10 out of 10 if you never smoke sick of it. But can I blow your back just a little bit? I hear you, but you're messing with the bigger fish. Ain't over till the fat lady sings. Tell your mum, grab a mic. You're looking like a snack, baby, can I get a bite? Don't pull it on the plate. Remember when we touched him, I bet we'll never say.
One of them man got a touch, man, them own up. Stop the drilling in my merch, you're a donut. Young boy made him so much money that he's grown up. Fuck if him, I'll send the rockets, get you blown up. Posh girls wanna take me back to their yard. I don't care if pops is racist, tell your dad I'm a star. And I watch this on his wrist, I put that on the card. We put bricks up on the strip and now there's bricks in the yard. 48 frames and a turtleneck. Fancy. Parents always love me as a dinner guest. Had the wins, but I'm not a winner yet. If we're trying to make a pass, I'm an intercept. Got the dog up in the club, I ain't bring a pet. Covered in the ice, I ain't trying to sweat. We can make some bread, we can split a check. But I ain't back and forth and on the internet.
No, I only go back and forth with the chicks I like. Now I'm joking, I'm moist and I'm kinda shy. But I just mix my drink so I feel the vibe. I'm so drunk, I might DM Georgia Smith tonight. She's got a wedding ring and she's in my vibe. Blood, I ain't even married, but I kissed the bride. I'm a pop star now, stop riling out. But I won't lie, I kinda miss riding out.
I was
out
on a fine line with them A-balls out. I don't play for NBA, but I'm able out. My brother's all in order, the heat in the corner. My bro skill make the Smith sing like it's Georgia. I used to always keep it easy with a jiggle back. And one kiss is all it takes, I could give you that. But I'm not gonna do it, I ain't whittled that. And now I'm playing by new rules, I'll just give it back. 48 frames and a turtleneck. Fancy. Parents always love me as a dinner guest. Had the wins, but I'm not a winner yet. If we're trying to make a pass, I'm an intercept. Got the dog up in the club, I ain't bring a pet. Covered in the ice, I ain't trying to sweat. We can make some bread, we can split a check. But I ain't back and forthing on the internet.
I ain't going back and forth cause I'm never listening. If you ain't getting money, keep the social distance.
Burbs on my shirt like I'm at a christening. Burberry front row and me Odell glistening.
I came here to party ball to Madley.
Real G's don't do balloons.
And I'm fake. White Air Forces, they're looking like Edge. I don't wanna force it, but she's looking like bait.
48 frames and a turtleneck. Fancy. Parents always love me as a dinner guest. Had the wins, but I'm not a winner yet. If we're trying to make a pass, I'm an intercept. Got the dog up in the club, I ain't bring a pet. Covered in the ice, I ain't trying to sweat. We can make some bread, we can split a check. But I ain't back and forthing on the internet.
No, sir.
That I was kind of confident in bravado, and the sample was from the Nightcrawlers, is that right?
Yeah, Push the Feeling On by the Nightcrawlers. So
yeah,
so they were really sort of around early 1992, but yeah, it was just as soon as that started, it was kind of like being whisked back to listening to Now compilation. So I sort of had to look it up, and this I think there's a more popular version, a more sort of bigger version of that song was from 95. It was on Now 30, because I did a bit of a tour around the old Nows, because that was like one of the ones we had a few sort of from the early to mid 90s. So that was very sort of it was more of a nostalgic bent for me on that.
Reminded me of like Tim Westwood driving up to the club in his car, you know, like trying to be like a player, you know. That's what I got out of it. Like a lot of bravado and confidence, which some of it I like the confidence, but some of it I did think strayed a little bit into sleaziness. Some of the lines I did think.
Well, that can be a little bit prevalent in some hip hop and sort of grime. But no, I think I say it's not necessarily my thing, but I quite like the way he does it. His sort of flow, for want of a better word. It's sort of a bit more interesting. I don't know. It's sort of along the lines of, I mean, he's sort of a collaborator with Dave, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
It was a guy called H. And he's a white rapper from London as well, but he's done stuff with him as well, and his was quite interesting as well. So it's a bit more interesting. But and he is also a Spurs fan, a Tottenham Hotspur fan, so that sort of appealed to me a bit as well. But also the first week of downloads when that was released, all the profits from it went to the COVID-19 Urgent Appeal supporting NHS staff and volunteers. So it was also a good cause for that as well. So I say you know me, it's not necessarily my thing, but I've got to admit, I'm just getting a little bit bored of some of the post-punk stuff that's coming out. I'm getting hearing a lot of it being pushed my way, and some of it just doesn't sound any different. Some of these are buzz bands, and you get, and I just, oh, I need to see this in something different.
So it's cool. It's cool.
Broadening my horizon.
Good to mix it up a bit.
Okay.
Anyway, Mike, what did you think?
Well, I mean, this was kind of a first, because like I'm not really familiar with a lot of UK hip hop, and as far as if it's like very city based in the way in the States, hip hop is very region based, and each region has its own kind of flavor from their cadence to the beats and production. And so that was kind of a thing coming into it. Like to me, like right now, as far as UK hip hop, it's all somewhat similar to me. And I haven't had the time to really listen to enough of it to understand the different, almost like regional flavor to it. Yeah, or, and so like with me, I like the fact it started out, I guess, with whatever the sample is, that's going to be the hook on this, that was very house oriented.
Yeah.
Cause I've been listening to a ton of house 12 inches lately. And so it was just like early on caught me just kind of like, okay, yeah, all right, I'm already liking this. But then again, like that, like as far as UK hip hop, just the cadence of everyone there is so different than American hip hop currently. And so that's, it's always interesting to listen to, but also with UK hip hop, I have to kind of take the extra time to figure out what some of the words mean. Cause I was just like, okay, well this is British slang and that's totally different than American slang that you would hear. But yeah, I really enjoyed it, but really it came to me, it was just almost kind of like saying what's happening. Or recalling where like I feel like a lot of American stuff when it becomes braggy is like really over the top, you know, like almost screaming the brags at you in a way. And so that was, I enjoyed it. I would love to see somebody take that track and make like one of those like real heavy house 12 inches where they just rip it apart and take just a few things and
probably
like,
have
like
it was a bit of a hit, wasn't it, in the 90s?
It did. They say the more popular, more well known version was sort of a couple of years after the original came out in the early 90s. So it was,
was a remix.
It was a chart hit, certainly.
I mean, yeah, it isn't that braggy because like UK hip hop probably isn't as braggy as a lot of American. So AJ Tracy, dinner guest. I'm going to give that, it wasn't really my thing, 6.5.
Well, it's going to be a 7 for me. So it's a lot of it to do with the nostalgic element from the...
I like the sample, yeah. I do like the sample.
It's a 7 for me.
This is somebody I wanted to get on the pod for a while. She's a hip-hop artist called Juice Menace from Riverside in Cardiff. The first track that came out this year called Bountifit.
Bling, no ice, start ringing a cell, they sing like pussy. They ain't built for the trap, all day sit mag, watch man get slugged in a bookie. Put your hand in a bag, 2 packs, that's a rap, bro, right there, got the goodies. Just brag, won't splash, went pale at the gash, how I know little bro was a rookie. Jay, how you look so cute, face like a box of puppies. Tell a man, just watch where you step, I don't wanna get my J's all mucky. Jaw drop like how you step so clean, well you know that my bro's too pluggy. And they love me, so everywhere I go, well you know that a man's been comfy. Drop me the Addy, I'm on my way, hop in the Uber straight from the bay. Vision on tunnels, so get out the way, I'm on a place where you cannot stay. Swear it's a mazza, I'm at the plaza, trappers are suited and they're looking dapper. Stop all the chatter, who got the dagger, gun it for me, what the fuck, I'm so flat. Kill it, land, don't blink, no eyes, start ringing a cell, they sing like pussy. They ain't built for the trap, all day sit mag, watch man get slugged in the bookies. Put your hand in a bag, 2 packs, that's a rap, bro, right there, got the goodies. Just brag, won't splash, went pale at the gash, how I know little bro was a rookie. I pre-order racket, bet they won't back it, hand on my waist and he's itching to grab it. Still on the bench, cause I bet you can't manage me. I pull up and I fuck up the traffic. They hand out smoke, they just hand out juice. Blocks on dark, cause they rob that food. I like Mac 10s, that's big boy tools. I was in a booth, I was like, fuck school. Work hard, live later, chase that paper. Fuck saving, man, I make it later. Indirects, man, fuck them haters. Count this P, then I build them flavors. No favors, man, I pray to the Lord, my savior. I done peeped, I was sat with traitors. Like a red man's mind, Xavier. Kill a land, don't blink, no eyes, start ringing a cell. They sing, they pussy. They ain't built for the trap, all they sit mag. Watch man get slugged in the bookies. Put your hand in a bag, 2 packs, that's a rap, bro, right there, got the goodies. Just brag, won't splash, went pale at the gash, how I know little bro was a rookie. Kill a land, don't blink, no eyes, start ringing a cell. They sing, they pussy. They ain't built for the trap, all they sit mag. Watch man get slugged in the bookies. Put your hand in a bag, 2 packs, that's a rap, bro, right there, got the goodies. Just brag, won't splash, went pale at the gash, how I know little bro was a rookie.
Yeah, so that's Bountifit by Juice Menace. kind of a gritty, confident style, I'd say, with sort of, it's very in your face compared to the AJ Tracy track, I'd say. She put it together with Jamie Lacree. I don't know. It doesn't mean, he doesn't mean anything to me, but you know, that's the producer. It's got a heavy trap beat and a sort of a piano. And I quite like, it's quite a, again, a bit of tongue-in-cheek Cardiff humor, I think, some of it. At one point she says, your face is like a box of puppies, and I just like that line. And there's just various other little lines that, I mean, she's alluded to sort of like street life and stuff, but it, a lot of it's kind of like playful, I think, because she goes on about hopping on the Uber down to the bay. And if you know Cardiff, it's not exactly like, you know, London mean streets or anything. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of quite sedate, really, in reality, you know. So, yeah, I kind of, it's more of a recommendation for her as an artist. She had another one that was going to pick, a new one called Money Dance. That's a bit more kind of a mix. This is quite in your face and quite like quite tough and brutal, really, in some respects, you know.
I was almost expecting when you said it was going to be Welsh that she was almost going to be a bit rapping a kind of a bit more of a Welsh accent. But it wasn't, was it? It was kind
I think she spends her time between Cardiff and London, so maybe that's where it's come from, the London thing. So,
I don't know what I was expecting from that one. I mean, even like when I first said Money Dance, I was initially, I think I was expecting, but it sort of felt a little generic kind of hip hop for me. I didn't really find anything to really grab hold of. I don't know.
You say it's like, more grime though. Wouldn't you say it's more grime?
Maybe. Yeah. I suppose it is more grime, but yeah, I don't know. I found the piano sort of got a little bit irritating. I don't know why. It was kind of like a very sort of simple riff that carried on underneath quite a lot. It was quite angry and almost like, you know, quite urgent for me. And I quite like that about her, but like I said, but you thought it was quite tongue-in-cheek, which I didn't really, without sort of listening to the lyrics sort of several times, I didn't necessarily get the tongue-in-cheek side of it. But I kind of liked her.
Just wit, I suppose. Sharp wit.
Yeah.
Sharp wit.
But yeah, I don't know.
It's so fast-paced, you wouldn't get some of it, maybe. I like how aggressive it is, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's that kind of frustration I quite like about it.
But exactly. So it wasn't.
It's all about taste, isn't it?
And how I didn't quite necessarily get the sort of wit side of it, but maybe it was more of a regional thing.
What do you think, Mike?
I think it took the video for me to enjoy it. Just because as a track itself, I mean, I thought it had a really great beat, but the piano hook could have been stronger, or maybe there could have been a layer of texture. Mm-hmm. Because the way she's rapping, it definitely has like the speed, and it's just the perfect just amount of like how she's placing everything. And there's a little bit of attitude from her, but I felt like the music's not really matching that attitude.
It makes sense.
But it's like also going and looking at the socials and stuff like that. Like, oh, this is a newer artist. And so
it's quite young.
So maybe it's kind of like
20 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was kind of the thing. Like, I was like, okay, what's a new artist? That stuff's not all going to be there just yet. But I thought the video production itself was well done. A lot of the lines that she had were kind of fun. So like, I didn't have the same, I wasn't being as harsh as maybe like the other hip hop act that we did earlier, like AJ Tracy, and kind of the way of looking at it, just knowing how new she is.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's
an emerging artist. I'm trying to promote, you know, behind,
you know, I could see just with like a little bit extra production.
Yeah.
The music could have matched her. And I liked her attitude. But as a new artist, you know, I think it's pretty solid debut in a way, I guess, only having what, like 2 or 3 singles.
Yeah. If you check out the other one, there's a bit more of a tune to it, I think. Okay. I kind of agree with some of the criticism, but I do like it. I'll give it a 7.5 again. Cause I'm trying to get behind that. Jim.
I think 6.5 for me.
Mike.
I'm giving it an 8. Ooh, so I liked what she was doing. I seriously, it all came down to like the little piano hook that became too repetitive.
If it was Money Dance, I think I'd have probably given it a 7.5.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I would have given that one a 9.
Really?
yeah I think it's really good. Okay, I mean, I've been listening to a lot of hip-hop lately.
All right, back to you now, Jim. Is it your second choice of the week?
Yeah, my second and last new track is from the Lemon Twigs, and this is Moon. Second single to be announced from their new album that is called, I think it's Music for the General Public or something like that. I may be slightly paraphrasing on that one. But when they released their debut album, Do Hollywood, I was a massive fan of that. And I thought they were, you know, ridiculously precocious and talented. Like, they were only about 18, 19, so the younger, they're 2 years apart. So they've been around for a couple more years now, Brian and Michael Daddario.
Where are they from?
They're Brooklyn, they're New York based, but yeah, their first time to Hollywood was great. And they just, like, ridiculously precociously talented, but we can play about 7 or 8 different musical instruments and used to jump between the drums and the front of the stage. So they share the sort of the frontman and sticks duty usually. But so this is Michael, who's the youngest one. He's just a bit more off the wall. He's kind of like this weird, almost like mix of like Keith Richards and Mick Jagger. Whereas he does his high leg kicks and stuff like that when he plays guitar, and he sort of has this really weird vocal delivery, as you can probably tell from that's this single. Second album didn't do anything for me at all. Go to School just was this weird like rock opera about a monkey going to school, and they just kind of tried to do the premise of it overtook any of the songs for me. Whereas the debut was great, and their EP in between the two was great as well. But this seems a bit more promising. They had the one previous thing called The One. So hopefully they're just making an album about with good songs on it. But yeah, I still think they're really good, and hopefully they're back to form.
I was kind of mixed on it, to be honest. I've never really been big into them, and I heard a few singles early on, and I kind of got more of a psychedelic tinge to them, I was expecting more of that. Mm. And this is very, very, very 70s.
Yeah, yeah, it all is. Really,
and I find with some of it, I mean, I did get a heavy sort of Springsteen, yeah, Dylan harmonica element at the start, and then it kind of went into this epic FM radio 70s tune. You know, but I just found a little bit of a retro vibe that it's hard to penetrate.
There is a huge retro vibe.
It's almost too perfectly done, if that makes sense. And I put that it's like a veneer that you can't break through and you can't penetrate. It's good at what it does and it's solid at what it does, but it never quite, I didn't quite love it. What do you think, Mike?
I think they're very talented, but I felt like I was listening to someone who programmed AI to be like, hey, write a song that combines Billy Joel, Elton John, and Neil Diamond. and it makes no, in that way that AI stuff makes no sense. I just felt that's what happened here. I don't know. I've never gotten into the band. Like, I know a lot of my friends listen to them and like them, and I hear their live performance is over the top.
Yeah.
But there's just something where it's just like, yeah, it just never clicked with me. But yeah, I just like, I don't know who they are. That's kind of the thing. Yeah. Like everything I've heard, like, oh, there's that or there's that, but I don't really know what's them.
There was another track I was listening to that sounded quite Paul McCartney, like 70s Wings era. Yeah.
They're very entrenched in the 70s. Yeah. I think they've basically grown up.
Magpies from the 70s.
Yeah, they've grown up with that. I say it's Ronnie DiDario. I mean, I don't know. Say, I think something has something to do with Todd Rundgren. So all that kind of thing definitely plays into it. Like you said, there's some elements of Elton John, sort of that kind of over the top theatrical side from his sort of mid 70s era. And it is. It can be a little bit OTT, but I kind of like that about them as well. But like I said, yes, I can understand why you think, you know, it's hard to penetrate. It's kind of potentially a little bit contrived. I think they probably are like that, but sometimes you wonder if it's just a bit too like show busy because
that's the thing. They remind me of that band The Darkness in that way, where it's just kind of like it's a persona or an act, and that's what I mean. Like I don't really know, like I can't really understand who they are. Like I feel like everything's through a filter when listening to them. You know, but again, very talented. They can apparently play anything and write anything and do anything, it seems, except maybe something original. I don't know. but I mean, I get it. Like there's a lot of, I mean, then again, I get it because like people listen to garage rock and garage rock tends to be the same thing over and over. Yeah. And so it's your spin on it. I guess the thing that they're doing is just the era of music I kind of never listened to. So it's hard to, like, it's stuff I hear, but it's things I would hear while grocery shopping or something. Like, it's the kind of music you hear when at the, you know, out shopping, that kind of thing. Or it's the music you hear that's always popular in some movie that gets used, you know. And I feel like they're on top of making something that sounds so familiar. Like, I know this, you know, and then it's like, you know.
I think I was just trying to sort of, like I said before, I was trying to avoid the kind of generic post-punk guitar stuff that seems to be literally...
Oh, that's fair enough.
Oh, there's a bunch of that.
Yeah, we played a little bit of the first few pods we did.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that it's trying to be something, you know, ridiculous. I do appreciate that, you know, kind of that ambition. But yeah, like Mike said, I mean, who are they? And if they made it a bit more scuffed up and kind of more personal, I kind of almost like that more, you know.
I think they're live, they're better because they can be a bit more shambolic and it can be a bit more chaotic the way that they do it. I saw them live a couple of years ago when they toured their debut album in Kentish Town, and they were great. So they kept swapping over instruments, you know, the drums in the front, and they basically played a lot of stuff on the debut album. And it was there, and they're really good because they're so talented. There's really good live, and there's a lot of improv and stuff, but yeah, but then they really sort of disappoint me with their second album. This weird. I said, there's this sheen and there's this layer of like almost like privilege that they've just been able to do all of this because there's probably their dad's studio and you know, they've listened to Todd Rundgren or whatever, I said Neil Diamond or something, or Bruce Springsteen, and they've just like written it because that's just what's played all the time, and or even just listen, you know, whatever their dad used to do. But
I used to find that about Jack White a little bit. It's kind of like he's so invested in that nostalgia and retro. It's like, you know, who is he? Who is he?
He shrouds himself in mystery.
Exactly. He's not that interesting, is he, really?
Probably not.
Somebody who's good at like reproducing that sound, you know.
Well, he did sort of change things a bit with I want to say Blunderbuss, but it probably wasn't. It was probably the one after that.
Some of the songs are good and some of the riffs are really good, but
he's
not bringing anything new to it, is he?
It's weird. I don't even think of like Jack White as like a musician as much anymore as I do like a businessman.
Well, yeah.
And it's this kind of thing where I feel like he's doing really amazing stuff within the industry as far as his pressing plant and like his label and things like that, to where I think of him more in that realm than I do. It's creative. Like, oh yeah, he does music, but
yeah,
like,
maybe
I just
he's
think
more creative in that realm, you know? No.
You know,
well, he did that.
I feel like Dr. Dre, isn't he? He's sort of more creative in that realm now.
There was that Boarding House Reach album was his last solo, which was a lot more off the wall. I've got to admit, I kind of didn't really enjoy it maybe for that. It was almost like he was trying too hard to be different. But and then he then did another Black on Tours album.
I just brought him up because he is one of these kind of like people who is steeped in that kind of 70s nostalgia, you know.
And it's just I was a fan of the first few like White Stripes and stuff like that, but then there was a point where it almost became like a character in a way, and I was like, I was not really into the character thing, but then it was kind of as he got more into the industry. And what I find interesting is he just, like, if someone has an interesting idea or cool idea, he's really cool about facilitating these ideas to happen and putting
Got a good imagination,
and so I think that's kind of a neat place to be, where he's become so successful that like when someone kind of approaches this thing, like, well, why can't we do this? He seems to be one of these people who's like, no, we can, let's just do it. Yeah. And not like, oh, what's this going to cost or these kind of things. It seems like he really is pushing the industry in that realm, but I couldn't tell you what the last few records he made sounds like. Yeah.
Anyway. So what are we going to give this out of 10? I'm going to kick off with, I've kind of written down 6.5, so I'll have to stick with that one, really. Jim?
7.5.
Well, now I just feel like a jerk. I'm going with 5. But, you know, again, it's a band, I think, endless talent. I'm waiting for the record where I'm just like, oh, that's who they are.
Oh, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Anyway, moving on to your second choice, Mike, this week.
My second choice was the Athens MC and producer Dope Knife and his song Life in Bottles.
Dope knife, get them snuffed when I blink at you. Eat your food, wake up, take a shower while I drink a brew. Drinking too, lips pink cause I got a freaking room. Think it's too cold out, so I think this mink will do. That's whack. I wake up and rap more than you. Plus I'm insecure, so everything I said before is true. Warn your crew, I'm like the Oracle, so for sure I do. And it's deplorable, but I got more of. If you want some proof, give a lot of bullshit, cut it with a quarter truth. I just hope that I can have a kid so I can show the roots when I go and say the roots. Am I talking about the band? Of course I'm talking about the fucking band. What else would I be fucking talking about? Nigga, of course I'm talking about the band. Choke a rapper's neck until that prick ain't got no oxygen. Go into his mama's house and then I steal a pots and pan. Crowd can give me heat, thought shit was sweet until I dox your fam. I'm the last verse that they still all say, Dunny. My word is bond and my will on break. Last dragon, the spit of the kill all day. Come off the top rope, fucker, I'm Will Offspray. And so that's why I make them panic much. They ain't got the stamina. They playing themselves, that's word to God, J. Rude to damage her. This is for the writer by the wall who got the canister. They don't give a fuck about your law, they gotta tag it up. Sorry for my grandma, but this chick, she was bad as fuck. Gave the knife an edible, it tasted like banana nut. Then she hiked the skirt and asked the nigga, am I man enough? I am a punk, still I got to fuck her while we standing up. She put it all on camera, I'm rapping out of blackmail. She said she put it out if I get waxed, so now I can't fail. You a snitch with a rat tail, you a bitch and... Nah, man, I mean, man, I was feeling the J Rhythm Damager part, and then just kind of went off on that tangent.
Hey, you want to hear it again?
The chick standing up, I'm not. What? No.
I thought it was good. It's like, I just don't know why you kept stopping.
It's like some meta thing I was doing on the song, where I was like, I'm gonna be talking about the shit as I'm making it. It's like a long thing. Don't worry about it. What
you say? Hey, why don't you try it again without stopping?
No. No, I don't think I will.
That was Dope Knife, Life in Bottles. I enjoyed that. It's kind of I like the groove, the laid back groove, and the kind of drowsy rhymes. It's almost like you've just woken up or something, or maybe the other end of the day, you know, sort of half asleep or whatever. I was struggling for a comparison, but I was thinking of Mos Def maybe, but I don't know. I'm not, again, I'm not a hip hop expert, so. But it's that kind of slightly stoned rapping. Stoned hip hop, you know. It's that kind of thing. I could almost smell the weed from the speakers, you know. And then I like the combination of sort of witty and personal.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I mean, his normal style is it's just kind of very like real, just he has this deep, it's just this deep voice. That's just definitely a calling card where you can really pick him out from other rappers, but just his lyrical, as far as like his other songs, this one not so much. I think this one's more of a playful one where he's almost like basically almost reviewing his song within his song. If you listen closely to all the background,
I wonder if it's like his conscience on his shoulder or something, that little kind of almost like in the background, you know, as it came to the end of a verse or chorus.
And it's just kind of funny that same thing, but like just knowing him as a rapper and performer, and I mean I booked him a few times, and he's working with a rapper on my label, and so they're doing a project together, so I've gotten to know him better. But like he's this amazing freestyler with this endless vocabulary, and there's these really cool things where when he plays live, he does this thing where people in the audience just bring up props or stuff in their pocket, and he'll just continue to freestyle based on what people bring up and put on a table in front of him.
Okay.
And it's just like, he's constantly pushing himself to just get better and better and better. And he's same thing with his production, and he takes a lot of risk, which is one of the reasons I picked a track for him, is that I feel like what he's doing is really outside a lot of other hip hop, and he's not really much. He doesn't really get into the bragging in to some degree, but like he has every right to brag because this dude's super smart, produces pretty much all his own stuff, and has this kind of amazing flow and his own like his own actual vocal style. And so it's like it's kind of rare to have somebody who does all of it. He even makes his own videos, and he's like a really good illustrator. And so it's kind of one of these things, just like, dude, what can't you do? That's why I chose it.
What do you think, Jim?
Oh yeah, when it first came on, because obviously I didn't know what kind of style of music or anything like that. When it first started, I thought it was going to be almost like 90s trip hop. I was kind of getting almost like a bit of a Sneaker Pimps vibe when it first started, because it was kind of a bit sort of a bit more of a trip hoppy vibe. But and then it was very sort of like you say, Bill, kind of like stoner, very laconic rapping, and of course slow rather than what we've sort of had so far today as far as hip hop's concerned. It's sort of a lot slower, and I do kind of like that kind of hip hop more than I do. The sort of the fast paced kind of stuff. I kind of almost like prefer that style. But like you say, he did seem like he could, I don't know, it almost sounded like a lot of it was a bit kind of improv anyway, as if it might, when he did it live, it might be completely different or something like that. But I got that it was kind of more tongue in cheek. I didn't know whether you were going to pick up, Bill, some of the lyrics where he talks about fucking some girl standing up and this guy. I think that kind of, but then he was kind of like almost berating himself for it when he did his little devil on his shoulder.
He said something about it's meta, didn't he, at the end, which is quite
it wasn't really my thing back in the day, or even like sort of more recently, but I've kind of been listening to sort of a lot of the trip hop and boys with and that, but that kind of sort of say almost like lazy style of rapping, I did like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a really progressive rapper, and like he's about to do a podcast that's like on a major podcast network here in the States called "Waiting on Reparations" with this other Athens-based hip hop artist, Lingua Franca, where they just talk hip hop and politics. Mm. I'm really excited for when that launches, just in knowing both of them and talking to Mac, which is Dope Knife, and Mariah, who's Lingua Franca. So it's just one of the other things. Like he's putting out a series of EPs this year, and it's just kind of a bummer because he had like this great year planned and a lot of touring, because he's actually an artist who likes to perform live, and then right as the touring was supposed to kick off, all touring got shut down, but he's going to continue to put out all these EPs that he had planned to release to go along with tours. So he's just continuing to put them out anyway, hold them back. Cause he just works nonstop. Like he's always recording, always writing.
We were asking every guest this question, Mike, when do you think touring's going to return?
Well, as someone who promoted and did shows and a festival and stuff, as a promoter, I wouldn't even try until there's like a vaccine. Just because it's too much risk and money. And I feel like that's going to be the other end where you don't want to go and put all the work in only to find out like, well, we can't actually do it. Yeah. And so I think maybe summer 2021, if a vaccine can be created or if maybe the virus actually weakens in time, from like maybe through mutation, it becomes weaker or something as, people start building up antibodies to it. I don't know. It's hard to say. I hope it gets back, but not at the risk of more people getting sick or dying.
Yeah. You've set up a group on Facebook, I noticed as well, haven't you, about the music industry, how it's going to recover or, come back as something different after all of this.
Yeah, it was just mainly to get people, like, within the industry talking to each other and, like, presenting new ideas, just kind of, because I feel like a lot of the industry is real disconnect where you have press that doesn't really connect with, like, festivals or organizers of festivals until they want someone to come write about it. Those people don't actually talk to the same people that do manufacturing, and that manufacturing can cover t-shirt manufacturing or sticker manufacturing or whatever, all the different parts of the industry that work together. And it just, you know, live music being gone is affecting everybody. Yeah. Like it's every single part of the industry is hurting from live music not happening. So I don't know, you know, I mean, the trickle down of no live music or bars being open and venues affects so much more than, you know, it affects the t-shirt printer. It affects the pressing plants. It affects, you know, your local alt weeklies or, you know, your city papers that venue and like theater and stuff like that advertising, you know, and those are music writers and entertainment writers that don't get paid, you know, because there's nothing to have ads for. Yeah. You know, and so you look at this one thing of cutting out live music or theater as well, and it just keeps shrinking this world, you know, which is already hurting, you know, even more. So
I've got a horrible feeling, really, we're running very fast headlong into a, you know, a second spike, because rightly or wrongly, and, you know, and a lot of times it's wrong where people are meeting up in parks, the people who were on the beach for the part like the bank holiday weekend, even last weekend, and then, you know, rightly for the Black Lives Matters protests and gatherings in Trafalgar Square. But I just feel like there's going to be a spike again. I think it's pretty much inevitable, and they're trying to get locked down. Well, the lockdown will be stopped, you know, on the 15th here. But I just think we'll have lockdown again within a few months.
Wales has been a lot more slow to open. They still haven't changed much. The only thing they've allowed is sort of people who are shielding to go out once a day now. But everything else is kind of the same, really. Or you can go and meet one other family from outside of your house, you know.
Outside
of the household.
It's weird to watch it. To watch how England's handled it, or Great Britain, I guess, considering everything. Just to see how it's been handled, you know, and the same thing with the United States. It blows my mind that the way it's being done, and then, you know, and also people being surprised as the infection rate keeps rising, and it's like, well, you know, or the fact that governments won't really put aside the business interest and protect the people.
Oh, they seem to have tried to move on from that, haven't they? It's all over. Let's carry on. Let's just open up. Dying. Like, you know.
Well, I mean, it is and isn't. I mean, there's in America, it's really weird because the president, you know, won't take responsibility, and so he puts it off on the states, and it's up to each state to say what their reopen date or whatever is, or when to start relaxing some of the rules. And that's the thing, like the state I live in was the first one to relax the rules, and we were almost one of the last ones to shut down. The numbers never gone down here, so it's starting to climb back up again. So it's kind of had this thing, and it stayed, and then it's starting to increase. So we never had, it's not even going to be a second wave in the US. It's just gonna be one bigger, you know, this plateau,
and then go up again.
And
what's happened here. The UK government, anyway, they went on about these five tests, but we haven't met the five tests that yet. They're opening everything. Yeah. So to me, a lot of it is about politics, isn't it? It's like the longer we're locked down, the more blame the government gets. So that's why they're rushing ahead with the opening, you know.
Yeah. I get the need for the economy to start again. And,
yes.
You know, everyone's going to have a problem, especially small businesses.
You've got to think about it. You can't just go, we're opening schools, you know.
No, exactly.
You know, you've got to think about how it's going to be different, you know, because it's not going to be the same, is it?
It's striking the balance as to what's best for people and what's best for, you know,
that's
stopping
the
businesses and the economy making such huge debt. But, you know, one thing you've got to sort of say that the government has actually done, and I suppose it has been glossed over a little bit, is the loans for businesses and things like that to get people back on their feet, however much it sort of smacks of the money tree being shook. At least they're doing that. But the fact is they've dealt with the whole COVID thing in general, and the way the lockdown the way they're dealing with it is farcical. And, you know,
How that'll be spun. It'll be spun that it's all our fault when it's
that's the point, isn't it? Yeah. So
it might be good, you know, that they're doing it now, but it'll be pain in the long term, unfortunately. Anyway, back to this track. We didn't give it a score, I don't think. I'm going to go for an 8, actually. I quite enjoyed it. Yeah. I quite liked how self-aware it was.
Jim? I'll go with 8. Yeah.
You know, I'm biased. I'm giving it a 9. which is, I mean, but, you know.
Yeah. Okay. It's you again for the classics as well.
This is Sleeper, Alison Bain.
Oh, look at that. And she's supposed to be on the diet. Wonder what her waistline will be like in 5 years' time.
Alison, the playground. She ain't got a boyfriend. That's a pity. She is not even pretty. Oh, Agnes hears them whisper. They smile when they see her. She'll discover girls don't.
Sleeper is a classic, haven't we? You know, me, anyone who's listened to this pod knows I'm a big 90s fan, and Sleeper, whilst never been sort of one of my big favourites, I mean, I love Louise Wiener, I like the It Girls, brilliant album, and obviously She's a Good Girl from their third album was my choice of classic. I think is underrated, and this is very obviously, if you didn't know Sleeper that well, if you did just know stuff from It Girl, like In Between and things like that, Saturday of the Century, it's obviously early Sleeper, and it's sort of quite noticeable. It's quite harsh. There's a lot more of a punky sort of effects to it. It's not quite so sort of the indie Britpop sort of sound that sort of became quite prevalent later on with their second album. But it's quintessential Sleeper, isn't it? And obviously very, very 90s. It's, you know, it's of its time, but I love that time, so I can't really do any wrong for me.
Yeah, I really like the riff. I wrote down nifty riff. like the sort of, it's sort of, especially the last part when it sort of exploded. I like that. And there's kind of a wonky rhythm, and I do like the way that Louise sort of puts across the characters in her song. There's kind of a twist in the tale, isn't there? The kind of melody is kind of like quite,
It's quite
bittersweet, isn't it? But there's quite a twist about, I don't know, she mentions self-abuse at one point. And
well, it's kind of like, sounds like it's about someone being bullied at school in the playground. Yeah. And then, about whether, it's almost like it's a sort of one that makes you think whether or not what she's in the end referring to is someone self-harming,
Yeah, I mean, I just, it was weird. Like, I actually chose this in listening to earlier podcasts, and you choosing a third album sleeper track.
Yeah.
And it made me start thinking about how, like, when I first heard Sleeper here in the States, it was from their first 7-inch.
Yeah.
But in the States, they had to be marketed as Sleeper UK because there was another band called, I think, like a metal band called Sleeper. But then
it's like London Suede, isn't it?
Yeah. It was like that. And so, and then when hearing them, it was definitely like a Pixies kind of vibe. Or to me, it felt like they were a little bit more of a commercial aspect of, say, like the Faith Healers, if you remember that band, like Too Pure band. It's like, it's definitely right before Britpop hit, or as in the States, I guess, new wave is the way they tried to sell it. So the single was before that, but I always went back to the single, even though I liked the first and second Sleeper record. I liked when they were this kind of rough, more American style, or nodding toward that Too Pure sound that would say like PJ Harvey or the Faith Healers or Moonshake and those kind of bands from that time, before they got the Britpop guitar sheen added to it. But I mean, the song kind of stays the same between the debut album and the single. I just like the way the single one had that rougher, just more lo-fi to it.
And they're back, aren't they? They're still going as well. They reformed
a few years ago. Their fourth album, which I didn't really absorb, but it's just good they're back, and they decided to give it another go and do new stuff, because sometimes the whole reunion nostalgia trip thing, sometimes it's great to start with, but then either you're going to push on, keep doing the nostalgia thing, it's like, oh, we're now going to do the next album that we released and do it all that. It's all well and good, and it's great when you're first going, this is a band, do that album, that classic 90s album or whatever, the first few that everyone loves so much, and that's great going to see them, but then it's like, well, what are you going to do next? You're just going to dis- just one more great.
Is it a nostalgia trip, or is it a sort of a genuine reason, artistic reason for getting back together? I'm going to give it 7.5, Jim.
Yeah, me too.
Yep, that's actually me. So, All right.
So, to you now, Jim, your classic this week.
So, it's very pertinent, but it was more down to the fact that I've been listening to him a lot over the past week or so. But this is Michael Kiwanuka and Hero. Yeah, it's a little bit self-explanatory, really, isn't it? Unfortunately. But as I said, it came from more listening to his three LPs sort of over the past week or so, and but still sort of comes to the conclusion that Kiwanuka from last year is definitely my favourite, because and it is a masterpiece. And but this is just sort of so prescient and meaningful at the moment. You know, the lyrics on its own, man, please don't shoot me down, I love you like a brother. It's on the news again. I guess they killed another. You know. But then, unfortunately, it's because it happens all the time, and but it's a beautiful song and an important protest record.
Yeah, it definitely got echoes of the civil rights songs, doesn't it, of the 70s?
Yeah.
I was thinking like Marvin Gaye, Bill Withers, etc. It's quite sparse, really, isn't it? It's not it's not a lot to it. I mean, it's quite pointed on the references to, you know, Black Lives Matter and you know, what's going on in the world, stuff keeps happening. Sadly. He's got quite a rich soul voice, hasn't he? And I like it.
I really like how it's the whole record anyway, as well as quite a sort of a 70s sort of soul psychedelic sound. Yeah, Stevie Wonder, and a lot of the music is on the album as well, which I really love. And he's almost like a Jimi Hendrix style guitar in certain I can't stop listening to it. To be honest with you, I haven't really stopped listening to it for about 6 months now. But yeah, this just seemed very, very prevalent and had quite a lot of meaning to what's going on at the moment.
What do you think, Mike?
Well, this was a new artist for me, like as one I was not familiar with. And it's one that I'm going to pick up a lot of the catalog now to check out. Like, I really enjoyed this a lot. But I mean, it really got me. I mean, lyrically, it's very real to what is happening, especially currently in the US. Yeah. But I loved the kind of light dub echo that is in the pretty much on the through this recording. That definitely has, and it, I mean, it is stripped down, but I think it's, you know, to me, it's like, it's stripped down because the lyrics pull forward so much more. But like, I mean, I you know, I have written down like, kind of protest singers like Richie Havens, but also a bit of kind of light psychedelic of someone like, say, Spirit, kind of a 70s throwback. But there's also the guitar tone, which is probably my favorite part, which reminds me of this kind of psychedelic band that was out of Denver, Colorado, called Bad Weather California. Ooh. And they had this definite take edibles and chill kind of guitar tone. and the song kind of had that with that little bit of that dub echo to it was just definitely like, oh, this is amazing. But the lyrics kind of cut through and kind of took me out of that a bit, especially right now, with all the stuff that's going on here and, you know, seeing, different friends and some of the bands on the label, like, participating in the protest and organizing protests, and just the stuff that's happening currently in the dumpster fire that is the United States.
What's it like? What is it actually like with you? I mean, it's quite good that we've got you on, really, to tell us.
I live in a small town that's not far from Atlanta. So it's like I don't really see the protest here, you know, but where I lived before, Athens, Georgia, a friend and label artist, Lingua Franca, who's also a county commissioner. She's someone that got so involved in she wanted to make a change that she actually ran for office and won. And she's actually a county commissioner in Athens that's, you know, trying to fix her district and help people. But, you know, she organized a rally that just got tear gassed on Sunday. So, you know, it was a very peaceful, no violence whatsoever, but it still got tear gassed. And what's like the state of Georgia is very right wing or conservative, and Athens, Georgia is like a little blue dot in a full red state, which is very progressive, or votes very progressive. And so it's just kind of wild to see, you know, people, you know, being tear gas, you know, on, you know, watching it live. You know, it's been building up forever, and you have like a country that is so divided and torn, and you have people who are getting misinformation through, you know, this right-wing media stuff, and that is selling them fear. And, you know, the idea that, you know, basically your neighbor can't do better, like your neighbor shouldn't do better than you kind of mentality. And, you know, and also at the same time, ignoring voices of silent protest of like just people like, you know, celebrities taking a knee or football players taking a knee. And that becomes a thing that becomes the news cycle where people get upset and it's like, no, this is a protest, you know, and you can't accept that, you know? And it's like, well, hey, you can't accept that. You didn't want to listen when it was, you know, and like, here's this thing and it continues to happen. And, you know, and you have people who don't want to believe that ages ago, like, you know, at the point where it's like, you know, the Klan, the Ku Klux Klan didn't just dissolve, you know, no, people just quit wearing hoods and they joined a police force. And they've been systematically, you know, attacking and killing people, you know, killing minorities for ages. And it's like, they're not out there marching in these hoods. Yeah, some of them are, but no, a lot of hard right and alt-right people have infiltrated the military and police here. It's just kind of turning. It's a real scary place to be right now. Like every day, like, I don't know. It's kind of hard. Because you see this thing and this idea that you're raised on, you know, like, oh, America, this great country and freedom and stuff. And then you get older and you realize like, well, freedom for some, it's not really free for everybody.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it just keeps kind of going. And then you start seeing like, wow, there's, you know, here's the president calling for the military to be turned on. Like, wait a second, you're taking people who are anti-fascism and calling them a terrorist group, but you won't denounce actual hate groups and terrorist groups, you know? And it's like, it seems like this mirror reverse world currently. So I don't know. It's scary. You know, this brutality is, you know, finally coming. It's coming to light, and it's not something that hasn't come to light before that. You've had people talking about it. You've had this forever. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, you have to look at a lot of early hip hop that is actually saying all this stuff. It is there. Just people decide like, oh, it's just part of the, you know, it's just part of the story. And that's how it works, you know? And it's like, no, that's reality.
Yeah. Talking about campaigns, there's a campaign for fuck the police to get back in the charts. So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, it's
NWA, you know, and that's going back to like the late 80s, isn't it? So
I mean, that's like 88 or maybe 87, something like that. But I mean, there's, you know, it's been there. You go back and watch a movie like Boys in the Hood, you know, and there's like, you know, you have, you know, Cuba Gooding Jr. getting pulled over, you know, by the cops and that kind of thing in it, you know, and it's like the fear of that. And it's just like, this has been here, you know, it's not new, you know, it's just, what's happening is more people are just now seeing, you know, actually getting to see it in real time as it's happening.
And of course, in the middle of a pandemic as well, that's going to affect BAME people more than any other groups. And also, you know, the inequality is going to be shown by this pandemic as well. That is being shown, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
the lack of jobs and, you know, lack of money.
I mean, yeah, this country's, I mean, it was already stacked anyway. The pandemic just made it more aware and showed the weakness of it. And unfortunately, there's a president who's an egomaniac that believes, you know, he's more concerned about his rating and his approvals and stuff like that, instead of actually doing the hard work and what's right. You know, and that's
dangerous, very dangerous having somebody like that.
Yeah. It's definitely, you know, it's that thing of, you know, when people are like, oh, my vote doesn't count, it doesn't matter. And it's like, no,
exactly.
This is exactly how it matters. I don't know. It's really scary outside of a pandemic anyway, but add the pandemic in with this and an election year and the idea of worrying, like, is there even going to be an election? Like, how far the, you know, the riots, how far is he going to take these riots to try to stop an election? I mean, there's already a point of police and military acting against its citizens that it's becoming a police state. It's kind of, it's really so crazy on a path to being like you know, kind of Nazi Germany, and it's bit by bit.
He is an authoritarian, isn't he? He doesn't want to be authoritarian. So,
you know, it's insane.
Just have to rely on his incompetence. That's all we can rely on.
I think that a lot of people say that it's like that, but I think at the same time, based on some of his early advisors and people that were surrounding the White House with like Steve Bannon and people like that, I think he knows exactly what he's doing.
We've gone way off topic, but it was it's great to see. I have a snapshot of like what America's like from your point of view at the moment, because it is, we are viewing it in kind of like, you know, horror. We've got our own issues in this country, but we are viewing it in like horror as well ourselves.
Yeah.
So Michael Kuanuka, hero. What are you giving that, Jim?
9.
You saying, Mike?
9.
So I'll go 8. I'll go 8. Okay, final track then of the podcast. Thanks for coming on, Mike.
Thank you.
Very interesting chat. So this is Strange Love, and this is Sway.
That can wipe me away, far away. For today, my life don't belong to me, don't belong to me, don't belong to me. So I sway. Yeah.
Okay, this is Strange Love from their album Love and Other Demons from 96. It was their second album. Their best album, I think, is 1994's Time for the Rest of Your Life, which is really dark and really sort of got a kind of claustrophobic atmosphere, but it's excellent. It's absolutely excellent. And it's probably their kind of like Dogman star, I'd say. They toured with Radiohead and the Manics, Strange Love, but they just never could quite have that hit. I picked this one because at the moment it kind of suits the kind of mood, I guess, that kind of resigned, exquisite kind of melancholia, I called it, with the strings and the way the kind of repeated refrains, my life don't belong to me, he sings at the end. And it kind of speaks to me, that lyric, you know, about feeling that you're not in control of your life and feeling sort of a bit lost and feeling. And I think there's an element of, I think he had addiction problems as well, Patrick Duff, the singer. But there's a kind of a lineage to it. You know, there's probably a bit of Scott Walker in there. There's probably a bit of Morrissey in there. They were very associated with Suede, Strange Love as well, because Brett Anderson also appeared on this album on a couple of tracks, backing vocals and stuff. And I think one of them went on to play in Suede as well. But yeah, I think Strangelove were one of the most underrated bands of the Britpop kind of era, I guess, because they just never quite had that hit. And they tried on some of the other albums to be more sort of poppy. And on this album as well, there's a couple of tracks that are sort of more going for the charts, but they never quite broke the charts, you know. But no, this one kind of spoke to me at the moment because it's got that kind of quiet air of resignation, I guess, and that's kind of how I feel at the moment with the way the world is. And I wanted to pick maybe Time for the Rest of Your Life, the actual track itself, because that's got more of a kind of guitar thing to it. And I was reading something on Wikipedia about Strange Love. They played with Radiohead, and Radiohead said they were post Strange Love as a band, which is quite funny looking back, isn't it, in a way?
Oh, yeah.
You know, obviously Radiohead went on to be what they became, and Strange Love kind of split up after the third album, and Patrick Duff has done various solo things since, and he's quite an interesting singer-songwriter. I actually booked him quite a few years ago for a festival. It was called Mindfest in Cardiff.
It's one of those bands like that we're slightly sort of below the likes of sort of Gene and Geneva and even My Life Story, things like that, but maybe they didn't quite match with the sort of, even, but those bands had their sort of their hits, or at least their more popular songs. And this thing, because obviously we've talked about it before, but Britpop wasn't necessarily what anyone was prescribing to back at that point. It was just a label that was given by the music press. So they weren't going in there thinking, what are we going to write now? Let's write a song that sounds like Blur to make sure we get our top 20. They were just doing their thing. And because that was what was going on at that point, and label maybe liked them, but it just didn't quite catch the public imagination, unfortunately. Because I hadn't really heard a huge amount of them. You knew bits and bobs, and this song I didn't recognise when I first went to it, when you chose it. But no, it's great. But like you say, there is definitely an element of kind of the Smiths and sort of earlier Morrissey about it. Not as maybe in his delivery, not necessarily his vocal style, just that kind of the way that went, that kind of slightly more sort of the more gentle side of the Smiths. So I sort of had, there's sort of a bit of a cross almost between something like There Is a Light and This Joke Isn't Funny Anymore. Kind of that more sort of laid back acoustic guitar based or something like that. But
what do you think, Mike?
Well, I mean, to me, like, I didn't ever consider Strangelove as one of the Britpop bands.
No.
And, like, well, I think the thing that kept them to me from like having hits was that a lot of the songs for me, for that band, seem more like autobiographical, where like Oasis sang about everyone else and like Blur sang about characters, and Suede had characters.
That's right.
But it wasn't personal. And I feel like, you know, with Strangelove, they were kind of more personal, like in the way that, like, say, you know, like Morrissey songs would be more personal, or Smith's, not as much character based. And so it's like, yeah, it's different because it's
it wasn't
like,
as universal, but
yeah.
But then when you dug into it and if you connected with it, then it was kind of bearing on a deep level. It was quite intensely emotional, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that was part of why they broke up as well, is that they kind of imploded, really.
So. Yeah. I mean, it's just because to me, I viewed them as like in the same thing of like, say, like Tender Sticks or My Life Story and stuff like that, whereas like they were a bit more theatrical, or they're a bit more like movie music, you know, and not as much, say, chart music, but they would
make their
music would be great placed in some movie in a context to help that scene. I really enjoyed Strangelove, but it was definitely one of those things where it's a band that's forgotten about, and it's kind of a shame.
Do you think it would be more about the fact that they maybe were a little bit too, you know, a couple of years too early? If they'd have got out of the other end of Britpop and then released these albums, and they might have had a bit more of a chance.
Yeah, but it was 96, 97, so yeah, maybe.
I mean, I think they could have been a band that broke the States had they done the thing, like a lot of Brit bands who actually had very personal connection to the lyrics, where, like in the here, you know, people really gravitate towards that. Where I feel like when at that time at Britpop, like it really was like everyone who was getting the hits were writing. They were writing outside of their own personal, it seemed, you know, where like someone like a band like Strangelove, had they had the support in America, I think they could have been one of those things. Like I say, if they were on some like Sire or Reprise, you know, the same kind of thing, like say like a Depeche Mode or a Morrissey kind of thing, where given enough time.
Yeah,
you know, and just touring,
it was definitely a band for like it was definitely like a band for Outkast, you know.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give it an 8 because I do really love that, and I've been listening to it a lot. Jim,
yeah, 8.
Cool.
I'm giving it an 8 as well. So.
Cool. We're all in agreement there. Cheers for coming on, Mike. Yeah, it was really interesting as well. Some of your perspectives on, you know, what's going on in the world and in music and stuff.
Yeah,
they're not exactly cheery, are they? You've been listening to Show Me Magic, episode 11. My name is Bill Cummings. I've been joined by Jim Orton.
See you later.
And Michael Turner.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers, and until the next time, ta-da.
See you later.
Bye.
You've been listening to Show Me Magic, a God Is in the TV recommend show. Check out more on godisinthetvzine.co.uk. We're on our Twitter page, God Is in the TV. We're also on Facebook, God Is in the TV Zine, with a dot. Thanks for listening. Until the next time, ta-da.